This is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
Who's knocking? So glad you're still awake. Darling, here's the only place that I call.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Joshua Asante? Y'all like Joshua? Joshua Asante is a photographer and musician. He's the lead vocalist and guitarist for Arkansas-based Velvet Kente and Amasa Hines. He enjoys quiet walks in the park and the occasional sugar scrub. All right, well, welcome to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at the beautiful Wildwood Park for the Arts in Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by Temino's Publishing Company and the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my right, playing for us tonight, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live. And what do y'all think about our set back here? Y'all like our set? We are thrilled to include this piece here from tonight's featured storyteller, photographer Nancy Nolan, from her amazing exhibit, Parks Pants. We also have our Delta Screen Doors with mixed media portraiture by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the South American South collection, which are for sale. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and VL at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Originally from Queens, Nancy Nolan is a commercial, interior, and art photographer who has worked in the business for over 30 years. She has been featured in numerous national publications, including House Beautiful, Essence, At Home in Arkansas, Traditional Home, Decor, and Southern Living. As one of the South's premier visual artists, Nancy not only considers herself a photographer, but a storyteller, bringing to life the people and places she is fortunate enough to capture. Her passion, energy, creativity, and commitment to each job is second to none. Based in Little Rock, Arkansas for the past 19 years, Nancy is constantly amazed at the creative people she is surrounded by who are always willing to open their doors and minds to new ideas. Tonight, Nancy takes us back in time to her front porch and a moment that changed everything. Ladies and gentlemen, Nancy Nolan.
It was early morning that day in the fall of 2007 when the absurdity in my life reached a tipping point from which there was no turning back. I had walked outside in my pajamas with a cup of piping hot coffee and sat on my sun-washed porch. My kids were still in bed, so I was fortunate to have this time to myself. I loved the tradition and the idea of coming outside to sit alone and meditate on what was on my mind. Something about the environment of my porch in the morning held a deep pull for me. But as was often the case during those years, being alone with my own thoughts was a curse as much as a blessing. I took a sip of my coffee and watched the smoke swirl from the top of the black liquid. My life had become a farce, an unmanageable mess. A few years before, he had left me for another woman. I was a damn cliché. Only she was an older woman. Geez, I couldn't even be a normal cliché. The divorce, dissipation of our combined companies, bankruptcy, co-parenting, the list goes on. I felt my thoughts start to spiral outward, but then I closed my eyes, took a few deep breaths, and my quiet porch brought stillness to my mind. My porch, with its crisp white walls, gray painted wood floors, and light blue ceilings. Was built in 1873 and wrapped around the north and east sides of the house in this historic Quapaw quarter of downtown Little Rock. My house was part of a historic tour that carted folks through our neighborhood on a bus. Because it was used for the setting of the TV series Evening Shade, a Bloodworth Thompson show with Burt Reynolds and Mary Lou Henner, among others. Not as famous as their other show, Designing Women, but evidently popular enough to warrant a stop for the tourists. And like all proper houses in the South, my porch had a very powerful ceiling fan. Looking around, I thought of the many photographs I had taken there, the people, famous, funny, sad, and tragic, I had met and gotten to know on this porch, and the families of those strangers who had tagged along. One side had a north-facing, constant, gorgeous, soft light. I had shot some of my favorite photographs on this porch. I could feel the calm washing over me and my mood shifting, as it often does when you're in a state of gratitude and appreciation. These were pleasant thoughts, and I was relaxing and calming down. A better feeling was washing over me, a quiet, soft breeze on a porch that I loved in a house I adored. It brought me peace. And then the bus pulled up and stopped directly in front of my house. The route and times were sporadic, and there were always enough breaks between tours that I often forgot about the bus, just like I had today. Now here I was, caught in my pajamas on display like an animal in a cage. In my panic, I tried to figure out how to exit with grace. It might be less embarrassing if I ignored it instead of frantically running into the house. So I chose to stay where I was, mostly because of the certain supportive articles of clothing I had chosen not to don on this particular morning. This way I could sit still and things would not be jiggling and flying about. It was a good decision, a choice that I more than often had to make in a split second when the bus would appear without warning from around the corner as if from nowhere. So I froze, and then I heard it, his muffled, amplified voice from within the bus, like Charlie Brown's teacher stopping yet again in front of my place. I sat very still, wishing I had brought something I could use to pretend to read, and really wishing I had put on my bra. The windows were tinted dark on the bus, but I knew they were staring at me, sitting here trying to look nonchalant. I sat for a while, and waited for him to finish talking, and waited for the inevitable laughter that would break out after he told his final joke, the one that I was sure was at my expense. I sat there in full recognition of how ridiculous my life had become. So I did what anyone would do at the pinnacle of her absurd life. In a split second, I made the decision to borrow money from my brother and go to a portfolio review in Houston to meet and schedule time with some of the world's best editors, curators, and gallery owners. They would review and comment on my work. My dear friend, Dave Anderson, had suggested a few weeks before that I go there with him. It was a whole weekend I was wildly interested in. I was wildly interested in going, but being divorced, depressed, alone, and bankrupt was getting in the way. But lucky for me, it was precisely in these moments the absurd and ridiculous would come out in me. I asked my younger brother for the loan and prepared for the journey. I have never been a person who has had or even attained to have certainty in my life. I don't believe in it. I'm not even a confident person, really, but I do have confidence in my abilities as an artist through my photography. I always have. It felt right and came to me easily. It had been the constant in my life, my touchstone, and my ground zero. When it all blows up around me, it's where I start over, what I go back to. Art has always afforded me a therapeutic way to work through my issues, so it made sense to me to find a way to kickstart the process. It made sense that I strip my work down and get back to creating. Maybe this trip would be the needed thing to bring me back. And knowing that my brilliant friend Dave would be there gave me the needed courage to do it. So what do I bring? What do I take that will lay myself out, bare my artistic soul to those giants in the field. Up to this point, I was struggling with being a fashion and commercial advertising photographer. Amongst my fine art photo friends, I was the sellout. I was making a living shooting advertising and not art. This is an age-old debate between art and commerce that I will not expand on now, but I was buying into what they said about it not being art. So I decided to take a look at my personal projects instead. All my projects were long-term photo studies, two of them having to do with one particular subject. At this point, I was 12 years into a study of my firstborn son's growth. I was shooting him yearly in a pair of his father's 501 jeans. This started with the desire to create a visual diary for my son, Park. In the process, deciding to take this project to Houston, I kept having doubts. All I could hear in my mind was, look at this housewife, mother, and her cute kid project. I knew personally how this project applied to my son and our relationship. I knew deep down it was a strong and well-executed photo essay. But I was also pretty sure it had no appeal beyond the family. So I struggled with whether to bring it or not, but ultimately I decided I would, along with two other projects of mine. The Houston trip would greatly influence my direction. The event itself was a whirlwind of new friends, new ideas, and big egos. All my senses sprung to life. I loved these people. Smart, arrogant, kind, shut down, open, loud. They had it all. I traveled alone, and it was fun and terrifying at the same time. As I went from review to review, curators, editors, publishers, I began to see a pattern. I began to see a pattern in the way they responded and spoke about my work. And the pattern was that there was no pattern. Everyone who spoke said and felt something different about my work. The only constant overall remark was about my discipline and skill level in the medium. This was easy for me to take in because I had seen what had happened to the industry as the digital age entered. Digital cameras allowed for an overall saturation of imagery into the market. Photography has always been the easiest artistic medium to contribute to, but due to that, it was also one of the hardest mediums to master and distinguish yourself in. So I took the compliments to my skill in stride, being more interested in what they had said about the projects, especially the one dealing with my son. Some dismissed it, but most thought it was a good idea and well executed. However, I was still looking for something to help me grow in a new direction. It was then that I sat with this rather thoughtful, interesting, and irritating woman. She asked me questions and shared ideas that she thought were interesting about the project. Ideas that I didn't agree with, presented in a blunt and sometimes insulting way. As I listened, I struggled to stay present and not get offended as we went back and forth with this conversation. It was a good, challenging exchange. She saw and spoke of things that were emerging from the project that I had yet to see. She said things like, I find the name of your project interesting because they're really not Park's pants now, are they? And how interesting that you chose to measure your son's growth against his father's pants, this icon that in essence is his father. What do you suppose that is doing to him? And it's also interesting that you are divorced now and asking your son to put on your ex-husband's pants every year. What's up with that? Are you trying to fill a void? And the kicker, you need to take a picture of yourself every day for a year. She was suggesting that I didn't know myself. I walked away from this exchange with the words WTF rolling off my lips. But when I processed what was said and sat with it for a while, I realized that I did not need to know if what she said was true or relevant to the project. There is no right or wrong in art, only what is. I didn't need to make a judgment about her words being right or wrong because both sides, hers and mine, were correct. She was feeling something and brought herself to the conversation. As an artist, I had done my job. Through my art alone, I created dialogue and discussion. I knew that in that moment, the project was valid and would have a widespread appeal. It had a depth that could speak to a broader audience. I didn't have to tell my story or explain in depth my ideas about the project's Parks Pants. Parks Pants could stand on its own. People would view it as they see it. When I was showing the project to men, often they would comment on their own journey and relationship with their father. I had taken this as them being dismissive, but now I see that they were feeling and reacting to the work. I had stumbled into the metaphorical meaning behind the pants. Every boy in his life has to try on his father's pants at some point. He has to check out the fit and feel and decide what parts to keep, discard, what to own, or what to leave behind. The people who viewed this would have to make those same decisions about the project. I still struggle with my own thoughts and ideas on the project and others, but I was free from the overshadowing doubt that it was shallow and not art. I realized it was my job to do the work, and to what depth it was perceived is not my concern. My job is to explore it and put it on the wall. It was for me to delight in the comments and insights people brought to it with no judgments, because all were right, because they had brought themselves to the picture. Once again, art had brought me back from the depths, reestablished my confidence in myself. It did so in the weirdest and most unpredictable of ways. It is a mystery to me how these tipping points in life appear and how the unknown path that they take will free you. I returned to Little Rock after that fateful weekend with recovered and newly discovered parts of myself in tow. 8 years later, I'm still paying off the loan that my baby brother gave that started this journey, and with a total of 20 photos spanning 20 years, Parks Pants is creating dialogue and discussion on a level I couldn't even have imagined. Just the other day, I drove to my old house in the Quapaw Quarter. I pulled up in front, put my car in park, and kept the engine running. From my vantage point, I could see that the porch walls were still crisp white, the porch ceiling in bright blue, and for a split second, I could see myself sitting there in 2007, wrinkled pajamas, steaming coffee, disheveled hair, trying to ignore my future self's gaze, just like I did with the tourists. And I wonder what my life would have been like had that bus not pulled up that morning and brought back the ridiculous and absurd into my life. Unfortunately, I will never know, but what I do know is that I am eternally grateful for how it all worked out.
All right, so we're going to go straight to the community conversation. So the other participants, if y'all want to come up.
Well, welcome to the community conversation. My name is Ken Clark. I am a psychotherapist. So we're going to do a little group therapy up here tonight. Park, right?
Yes.
Oh, it looks so different than the photographs, right? So I wanted to start with kind of a light, fun question. If there was one picture that you could take or give us that would show us your concept of your mom, what would it be?
Oh, man. A picture.
Your mom in a picture.
My mom. Beautiful. That's a word, not a picture. Mm-hmm. But if I had to choose a picture out of Parks Pants that would best represent my mom, it would probably be the one me dancing with the cat. Like that. But
why?
Honestly, mostly just because of the hugely positive influence she's been in my life. The fun and goofy and happiness that she's given me, either through genetics or just through raising me well. But it captures the spirit of her perfectly, I think.
And it may be the Freudian in me, but did everybody catch, and I'm sure you caught by now, that genes and genes are interchangeable?
It was not my intention when we started the project, but it became, about this time, it came to light that was a big part of it. And watching the pictures stand on their own, I realized that it was, and watching him grow and knowing his father, it was pretty interesting. A thing we stumbled into for sure with the genes.
So one of the ideas in therapy broadly is that through observation we become aware, through aware we can garner insight, and through insight we can promote change. you've been observed. What have you become aware of in yourself that's, when we think of those genes and what was hardwired into you, what have you been able to change? What have you grown into? Where do you see your dad in you?
That's a really good question. That's a hard question.
I'm a shrink.
Hey, I'll just use this as a free consultation. This will work out great. Well, I guess starting on just a physical level, it's been interesting because I'm not as tall as my dad. I have more of my mom's height in my mom's side of the family. And I also have like the Italian hair from, you know, the heritage from my mom's side. And so physically, I think, at least in terms of my body shape, I got more of my mom's side of the family. However, I'm certainly my dad in quite a lot of ways. I talk a lot like him. Like, he bobs his head like this when he's talking. And I can see, a lot of my face looks like my father. Yet I have my, Italian mom, you know, mom's side of the family's nose. I see a lot of character traits between the both of them. It's a hard thing to try to narrow out what comes from where. But since I was lucky enough to grow up with both of them in my life, I'm kind of an amalgamation of the two.
Nancy, how old were you when you married Park's dad?
I was 29.
29.
Yeah.
How old are you now, Park?
I am 20.
Okay. So we're about 8 to 10 years from, well, how old was Park's dad when you started dating him?
I was 25, so he was, like, I guess, about 27, 28.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're within a few years of when he started dating Park's dad as far as Park's age.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah,
that's where he's going.
Another odd Freudian moment. So.
Yeah. Wow.
No hints, Mom.
No hints. One of the things you said in the video, Nancy, was that early on, Park had a connection with the camera. And this is kind of where I bridge it between the two of you. Did you see her at all separate from the camera growing up? I mean, your mom's, one of her primary objects was this camera. And so you observed in the film that he was very into the camera, but it's hard to associate you separate from the camera. So how do you see that camera as a bridge between the two of you and your understanding, growing understanding of this woman who's raising you?
It's another good and hard question. It's, you know, when you view your parent, like, at least in, it's hard to say how much of, you know, because photography has been such a big part of my life. That it's honestly hard to say. Like, it's definitely a part of my mother's identity. Like, I can't separate photographer and, you know, Nancy Nolan and mother. Like, it's all kind of the same blend. But at the same time, you know, I grew up with it, so it's a very normal thing. It wasn't unusual. It's like looking at a Christmas once a year, or looking at anything like that. It's just a part of your life. And this is honestly the first time I've really been trying to think about it in such an analytical way. It's just been a very natural part of growing up for me.
She's probably trained you well for married life. You'll hold still really well for pictures, which most husbands don't. So are we done yet? So, yeah. Nancy, how do you see that camera as a defining connection between the two of you?
When I got pregnant with Park, I decided to stay at home. I decided I was going to be the perfect mother. In fact, he didn't have sugar for the first 3 years. His one-year-old birthday cake was a carrot cake thing. Oh, my God. Nobody ate it. The dog wouldn't even eat it. It's horrible. I don't know what I was doing. But in the process of that, thinking that that's what I had to do, I stopped shooting. I gave up photography for a period of time.
Yeah.
And
to be the perfect mom.
To be the perfect mom, yeah. And the camera became, for us, that's all I was shooting, was him. So it was very much, I can see why he had that identity with it, because it was always in my hand, and I didn't know how to, I would not call myself the normal mother. I'm not definitely not normal. I enjoy working. I like working. When I went back to work, I got my life back to an extent. But the time I spent with him was very difficult because he was in the hospital for 2 months. He was 2 pounds when he was born, I guess, if you saw the video. So I was coming off of being preeclamptic, which was hard to deal with. I was depressed. I had post postpartum depression, the big kind that lasts for like a year. And I was alone in Little Rock, where I didn't know anybody, with him. So we spent a lot of time together, and he spent a lot of time with the camera, because that is what I know, and that is where I go back to. So there is that bridge.
You shared with him who you are.
True. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Nancy Nolan, for being on the Tin Roof Project here on Tales from the South. You can find out more about Nancy and Parks Pants at her website, nancynolanphotography.com. Thank you to our live audience here at Wildwood Park for the Arts, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by Temenos Publishing Company and the Midnight Muse Writing Workshops. Additional support provided by UALR School of Mass Communications, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, Little Rock Soiree Magazine, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Arkansas Arts Council, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. We are open for submissions from all Southerners. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Writer accommodations for Tales from the South provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhouseNLR.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by the UALR School of Mass Communication. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can all be found on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for keeping the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.
The trees over there. sorrow. Woe to the down presser. Eat the bread of sorrow. Oh, I am that I am by the grace of a God. And the praise your hatred, it matters not. Oh, I am that I am by the grace of God.